The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from KAOS 89.3 FM, Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Right. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for October 9th, 2020. I'm going to replay a show this week that originally aired shortly before the 2016 election. Enjoy. Ha-ha. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for March 18th, 2016. And I am calling this week's show Matters That Matter. Here at the Thunderbolt, what we like to do is combine brilliant political analysis with dumb jokes. Though this year, it's getting harder to tell the difference between the two. And now,
take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand.
It's election season.
I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me.
This is that Grand Circus Extravaganza, held every 4 years, wherein a few rigged voting machines in a few key states will determine which of two lying corporate fascists that Wall Street will install in the White House this time.
You can't take the sky from me.
In addition, this election cycle is already providing such an amazing overabundance of fodder for comedic comment that I'm frankly starting to feel a bit overwhelmed. How can one possibly keep up with such a never-ending torrent of such incredible folly? So much ignorance, so little time. Glenn Greenwald has been warning us for many years now that the ultimate goal of the U.S. government is to completely eliminate all privacy for everyone everywhere in the world. Nicholas Rockefeller has revealed that Wall Street's ultimate goal is to implant everyone with RFID chips, and then to keep all of your personal information, your bank accounts, your health records, your police records, all of it. They want to keep all of that information stored on these chips so that their goons can then just scan you and instantly know everything about you. They want to create a world where they can literally monitor every move, word, and action that you make, say, or do. If you have information that they want, if you are saying or doing things that they don't like, if they need a patsy to take a fall for something, well, they know where to go, they know who to see, and they know what to do. And whenever you purchase something in this brave new world, rather than bothering with cards or cash, the merchant will simply scan your chip. And the government, of course, will instantly note what you just purchased. This system would also allow them to turn off your chip if they decide that they don't like what you're doing or saying. I mention all of this because the Obamas just made their latest power play toward achieving that end. The FBI wants Apple to build a backdoor into your iPhone. This is serious, kids. Edward Snowden has called this the most important privacy issue of the last decade. And to their very great credit, Apple is fighting back. So let Apple know that you appreciate this. Though since contacting actual humans at any of these mega corporations seems to be an esoteric art that I have failed to master, I'm not sure exactly how you would go about actually doing that. You should also let the Obamas know that you don't appreciate that. And there are numerous very effective and not so effective methods for doing that. Phone calls to the White House are easy, and they do pay attention when lots of calls come in. And FYI, the cyber community is utterly united on this, and they have Apple's back. Except for Bill Gates. Well, you know what? Bill Gates. What do you want from the offspring of a eugenicist? In addition to Bill Gates, the Obamas also very much want this to happen. The fact that there are some Americans that can still keep some secrets from them drives them totally crazy. This is going to be a battle of titans. Stay tuned to the Thunderbolt for further developments. And now, my children, it is time for a brand new Thunderbolt feature that I am calling The Wisdom of the Thunderbolt. Prepare to be enlightened. And this week's words of wisdom are this. Always remember that every silver lining is always attached to a dark cloud. And now, for some legal matters. I would like to read for you my very favorite quote from a Supreme Court justice. Mere factual innocence is no reason not to carry out a death sentence properly reached. Yes, kids, that was Antonin Scalia. So there is much debate over what is the worst Supreme Court decision of all time. Dred Scott is often cited, though Bush v. Gore represents a formidable challenge to Dred Scott for that particular title. And Citizens United also deserves dishonorable mention. And the fact that basically the same court decided both Citizens United and Bush v. Gore will be noted in the history books. That is, if we survive long enough to need history books. But wherever you stand on this debate, I firmly hold that the quote represents the most outrageous quote opinion from a quote supposed juror in all human history. The quote is excerpted from a concurrence that Anton Scalia wrote in the case of Herrera v. Collins, wherein a defendant who had been convicted for killing a cop later proved his innocence. But he missed a 30-day filing deadline for his appeal, and thus the state of Texas insisted upon executing him anyway. I have described at length, in past Thunderbolts, the rule wherein any time a cop gets killed, then someone will spend the rest of their life in prison for it. And if the cops can't figure out who actually did it, then they will, quote, make a case against whomever is the most convenient. In the case of Herrera v. Collins, the Supreme Court decided that procedure takes precedence over actual innocence. This means that under our system of jurisprudence, procedure evidently also takes precedence over sanity. They not only agreed, they agreed by a 6-2-3 vote. Mr. Herrera may have been innocent, but he had not followed proper legal procedure, and so he could be legally executed, in spite of his proven innocence. And he was indeed subsequently executed. Scalia simply ruled that Mr. Herrera's factual innocence did not matter legally. However, Sandra Day O'Connor's concurrence was in some ways even more disturbing. She maintained that Mr. Herrera could not be innocent no matter what he proved, because he had been found guilty in a court of law with all the, quote, protections that procedure provides. And we all know those protections are infallible. Anytime that civic leaders start taking on the mantle of infallibility, it is time to start covering your ass. Never fear, though. If they cannot get away with killing them, then they can instead just lock them away, incommunicado, incognito, and forgotten to a small cement hole to just sit there by themselves forever and ever after. It is a thoroughly established and irrefutable, empirically proven fact that locking people into conditions of solitary confinement literally drives them insane. The United Nations classifies any more than 2 weeks of solitary confinement as torture. But in spite of all that, solitary confinement is still a common practice throughout all of the state and federal prison systems throughout our country. This has all become relevant again because Albert Woodfox has just been released from Louisiana's infamous Angola prison. Mr. Woodfox spent 42 years in solitary confinement. 42 years in solitary confinement. 42 years in solitary confinement. Mr. Woodfox has the dubious distinction of spending more time locked up in solitary confinement than any other documented case in human history. And not only that, but on Monday, February 22nd, I watched Mr. Woodfox give an interview on Democracy Now! Now, he was not the most coherent or loquacious interviewee, but I find it amazing that he is not gibbering incoherently whilst wrapped into a ball on the floor. So whatever. Congratulations, Mr. Woodfox. Welcome back to the world. Other than that, though, I am unable to think of a single frigging word to say to you. So I think I'm glad that I probably will not need to. Years in solitary confinement. 42 years in solitary confinement. I have to keep saying that over and over again because I cannot believe it. All right, so moving right along here, I must now ask listeners to contain your excitement, for next we have what is becoming a regular weekly feature. Yes, kids, it's time now for a few gray-haired thunderbolts from none other than the toothless old grandpa himself. Recorded live and in person right here in the secret underground Thunderbolt studio. Yep, you're a big hit, Grandpa. You leave a large pair of shoes to fill. And if you thinks for 1 minute that you are capable of filling them, then I thinks that you got another think coming, youngin'. Ooh, snap. And you know, now that I look at them, your shoes are so large as to rather resemble those worn by clowns at the circus. So indeed, I would never think of trying to fill your inevitable shoes, Grandpa. And sometimes you break character and show a spark of intelligence. So why don't we just go ahead and get down to business here? Rumor has it you have some economic matters to share with us this week. So why don't you just jump to it now? No problem, son. For several decades, following World War II, the 1% was taxed over 90% on personal income over the equivalent of a few million dollars. Banks operated within a regulatory straitjacket, and labor unions effectively defended the interests of working people. Even as they simultaneously defended the interests of organized crime. Now, during this period, the unions assured that wages and increases in productivity roughly corresponded. As workers created more wealth per hour, they also shared in the increased profits that those increases in productivity created. Well, that all stopped in the 1970s. Suddenly, even though productivity continued to exponentially increase, wages suddenly stopped growing, and at times, they even began declining. And all those extra profits from the increased productivity were instead kept by the 1%, who then lent it back to those very same workers at extortion level interest rates. Thus, not only were workers robbed of the extra wealth that they were producing, but that stolen wealth was then used as a lever to fleece even more of their wealth out of them. And as a result of all this, the last 30 years has witnessed the most massive, quote, redistribution of wealth in all human history. In the 1970s, the United States was the world's leading lending nation. Nowadays, we are the world's leading debtor nation. The way you create real, tangible wealth, as opposed to ephemeral paper wealth, is to take raw materials and then to make something useful out of them. In the 1970s, the United States was the world's leading importer of raw materials and the world's leading exporter of manufactured goods. Nowadays, we are the world's leading exporter of raw materials and the world's leading importer of manufactured goods. I've heard economists on the media machine talk about the difference between a recession and a depression, and they almost invariably manage to do this without shedding any light whatsoever upon said difference. So for the record, a recession is a normal adjustment to a capitalist economy. They usually don't last long. While a depression is a long-term downturn that often takes decades to recover from. So which definition do you think applies to our current situation, huh? And as for that touted economic recovery they keep talking about, don't hold your breath. The 1% has gutted our country. The United States of America has been stripped down and parted out like a stolen car in a chop shop. In spite of all their rosy predictions on the media machine, I can guarantee you there is absolutely no economic recovery coming towards us anytime soon.
Damn, Grandpa, you are truly one amazing old dude.
We's gonna be back after a quick station break.